chiama Colola, Colola, Colo, Colola, mamma Colola, Colola, eme dodo, dime la la mchangani, eme dodo, eme dodo. Dime la la mchangani, Bahuba, Tamasoea, uwe wangu wa milele. Bahuba, Tamasoea, uwe wangu wa milele. Kolo, Kolola, mama Kolola, Kolola. Kolo, Kolola, mama Kolola, Kolola. Eme dodo, eme dodo, dime la la mchangani. Eme dodo, dime la la mchangani. Wahuba, Tamasoea, uwe wangu wa milele. Wahuba, Tamasoea, uwe wangu wa milele. Wahuba, Tamasoea, uwe wangu.
Good morning. Welcome to the G spot, the good spot, the graham spot, God spot, where all the G's meet. It's been a long, long week since we last met, but yes, here we are again with a very interesting conversation. Conversation that I have taken a lot of time and invested in really coming to a proper understanding of this so that we can have this conversation today. Well, I hope everyone is fine. I hope you are fine wherever you are, and thank you for always listening. Thank you for tuning up every week. So, on this week's episode, I happened to come across this Netflix series that has been trending for the last 1 week. It has caught so much attention of people out here, and I happen to be among those people who got interested in it. So maybe you've not watched it, and I'd want you to watch it before you listen to this. Yeah, there's a Netflix series called Jeffrey Dahmer. It's called Dahmer, I think, but it's the story of a serial killer by the name Jeffrey Dahmer. So basically, this is a story of a serial killer, someone who committed a number of murders over the last through the 70s. But after I went through that series, there's one thing that I noticed about him which was very peculiar, right? And I thought, well, this is quite interesting. Why was this guy was into pornography a lot? And our conversation today is basically centered about understanding the relationship between pornography and violent crime. You understand? So I noticed that this guy was into consuming it was consuming pornography for quite a long time. So I thought, maybe this is just a fluke. Maybe just one guy who behaved like this. And maybe this was an effect that happened on one individual. But then I did a little research. I tried to test a few individuals. So I went through stories of like two other very renowned serial killers I know in the States. And I realized the same thing. Is a very huge influence of pornography on violent crime in almost the lives of all serial killers across the world. Across the world, by across the world, I mean ranging from the US to the UK to Africa. It's just an occurring that just it's a recurring scenario. It's the same old story of this guy saying that at some point they were consuming this so much that it affected them to a point whereby they decided, you know what, we want to do it, but on a different level. So I thought, is it possible that these guys, I'm not saying that the reason they committed whatever they did was because of porn, but is it such a driving factor behind, you know, some of the actions, some of the worst actions of these people throughout history? And to be honest, I came to a realization that it's quite true. And I thought, today we're going to talk about this, like on a serious note. So we're going to start with understanding First of all, I realized that most of the serial killings that happened, especially in the United States, happened in the 70s. And I asked myself, why is it that guys like John Gacy, guys like Ted Bundy, guys like there's a guy called Manson, all these guys were very active in the 70s. I asked myself, why is it so? And I came to a realization that the reason why most of these killings occurred in the 70s was, first of all, the influence of the Vietnam War and the Watergate scandal in the States. You know, I don't know how many guys are aware of the geopolitical situation, you know, in the past and the present and probably in the future. One of the factors that affected and made it possible for the rise of these guys was the 70s, right? The swinging 70s, as they termed them, you know. The Vietnam War was it brought back guys, the most of the fathers who came back after the Vietnam War were suffering from PTSD. And you know, at that time, at that point in history, society didn't have a way of coping with, you know, how guys were dealing with things like mental illness at that point. So there was a problem with how they brought up most of the boys at that time, you know, coming from war, you know, someone who's seen like bad things is coming to be a father. It did have a small influence. I'm not saying it's like a big influence. It's one of those factors that drove the rampant killings in the 70s, right? The swinging 70s themselves, it was a period in time, of course, when the young felt very liberated from social conventions of the previous decades. You know, this is the point whereby we were seeing things like the gay culture was being, you know, it was really rising up at that point in history. So it was a factor. It was a factor. There was so much freedom. People were dropping out of school and just to enjoy life. So at that point, we see that it was a new age in terms of also technological development. You see, we saw the development of floppy disks at that time, and it became possible for guys to actually watch things like videotapes are in their homes, right? So at that point in history, there was so much that happened in the 70s. The 70s, I think, in history, it was a decade that was quite transformative in providing the base for the future which we have today. It was basically, it laid the foundation of things like the internet, you know, TV, all these things. The 70s was an active time in history. The Watergate scandal also affected the economy a lot in the States by the fact that there was massive depreciation in economic performance and also the trust of the people in the government. It led to the resignation of the then President Nixon. I don't know if it was Richard Nixon or something. Yeah, President Nixon resigned because of the Watergate scandal. So all these things played a huge role in creating the monsters of the 70s, the serial killers of the 70s. There's actually a book written by, I don't know who is it, but it's called Sons of Cain. It's something you could check out. And it's trying to understand basically why these people cropped up in the 70s. So let us focus on what we want to talk today. We want to understand Jeffrey Dahmer first. Then we're going to compare with things like guys like John Gacy, Ted Bundy. Then we have a conversation about this thing. So the background of this guy, Jeffrey Dahmer, who is he? He's actually a young man from a well-off family, I think. The father was quite successful. That's the one thing I noted. He was a chemical engineering student, later professor. So this guy, I see him when he was growing up. He's a guy who grew up with attention. He was deprived of attention from both parents. The dad was working hard on his PhD at that point. The mom also, she was pregnant with his younger brother, and mom was clearly struggling with a lot of things at that point, especially the use of drugs. Yeah, she was also depressed. She was also depressed after that. So we also see also a very poor relationship between both parents. You can see they are always in constant conflict, and the child is exposed to this. But some of the things that started standing out for me, apart from bad parenting, which was a factor in the kind of behavior that he came to embrace in the future, was two things. First of all, this guy was he had masturbation tendencies. We see that in the year 1986, he was arrested for masturbating in front of two 12-year-olds. That is the first case. He was also arrested at some point. It was during Carnival that he was also caught for the same thing. So we see masturbation tendencies through his life. He also had a strong history of alcohol abuse. So drugs also played a factor in transforming this guy to be what he is. So basically, this is not important. But the key thing I want us to really look at, the thing that I want us to talk about today, is how masturbation and pornography influenced him. He was also exposed to porn from a very young age. That's one thing. You can see through the movie, through the series, if you've watched it, you see the father even encouraging him. Have you bought any Playboy? What are you looking at? But this guy was looking at gay porn at that point. So how does pornography influence the mind of a serial killer? That is the question, right? So I did a little bit of statistics study. Yeah, and I came up with this. Do you know that over 95% of serial killers that have been caught and convicted over the last 60 years, 95% of those serial killers claim to have been influenced by pornographic addiction? That is one thing that should be very, very surprising to you, but it is one thing that you should be aware of. 95%. So generally, violent, hardcore, / fetish related, e.g. necrophilia, which escalated into fantasy involving their crime, were the main kind of pornography they were into at that time. So, important question to ask ourselves, like, is it only the violent / hardcore / fetish related pornography that influences the mind of serial killers? Are we safe consuming soft porn? That is the question you'll ask yourself. And of course, the answer is no. Because this thing is an escalation. It starts with you consuming the very, very slightest of pornography. Slowly by slowly, you don't get enough of it. You want more. You want more. The more you want it, what do you happen to come across? You come across this violent kind of pornography. You know, I mentioned necrophilia because it's one of those things that cuts across most of these serial killers. Necrophilia is basically an obsession to have sex with guys who have already died. Right? When you look at the life of Jeffrey Dahmer, he's a guy who killed 17 boys. And at some point, it got to a point whereby his need to control, like these guys, made it obsessive for him to actually kill the individual so that they would be totally submissive to him and whatever he wanted to do. Now, this is where necrophilia comes, is the need for control. John Gacy suffered from the same thing. He also killed 33 boys. Ted Bundy killed 30 plus. He also suffered from the same thing, that need to control your victims. Of course, whatever you consume in pornography is not something that can really happen in real life, whether it's with a man or a woman. Which I've never, I personally am not very comfortable with what am I trying to say? Okay, the point is, it's not possible to achieve whatever standards that have been set in whatever you're watching in real life. It can never be attained. That is why you'd rather have that person dead so that you can do whatever you want with them. So this is the whole idea. This is the whole idea of how pornography is going to influence the life of most of these serial killers. Maybe it's not the direct result. I mean, it's not a direct manifestation of what they've been watching over the years, but there's an influence of porn on the mind of most serial killers. So let's look at something else, right? One of the things that you should understand is the fact that pornography fosters aggression by normalizing and depicting verbal and physical violence as enjoyable. That's a very, very, very true statement, right? It makes it look like aggressive acts, especially against women, are quite they're enjoyable to them. But one thing we want to understand is the fact that aggressive acts against women in porn occur 87% of all scenes that you see, and 95% of the times they occur, the women respond with expressions of pleasure and neutrality. So this is something that is teaching the mind of a young person. Just in fact, do you know, guys, that the average age of guys being exposed to porn is actually 11 years? Quite interesting. 11 years is very young. So imagine that young mind seeing that whenever aggressive acts occur in 87% of all sins that they see, 95% of the times, these people who are being inflicted the pain actually enjoy it. They respond with expressions of pleasure and neutrality. This is normalizing violence from a sexual perspective. I've never seen a serial killer who just commits the killings without a motive that is not sex-driven. Most of the time, it is sex-driven, right? So, I thought, why don't we listen to someone who has actually done it? I want you guys to listen to this. This is a very, very interesting conversation that Ted Bundy had with, I don't know, some guy in the clergy back in the 1980s. Ted Bundy was a serial killer who was quite outspoken over the years. He's one of those people that maybe the people in the States will never forget over the many years to come because of the ruthlessness in his actions and the way he was never remorseful through it. But once, I don't know, before the day of his execution, before the day he was going to be executed, you know, there are states in the States, wow, this is interesting, there are states in the U.S., states that actually have the death penalty. So this guy was sentenced to the death penalty. He was going to be electrocuted, right? So the night before he was going to be killed, he happened to have a conversation with a man of God. I don't know whether it was his last, he was trying to clutch the last straw before he died so that he would prove that the reason why I've done this is this, but he talks about this thing, and I want you guys to listen and process this information. We're going to delve deeper into this conversation. At some point, it's going to get really uncomfortable, but I hope you're going to be with me till the end. So, let's listen.
What I'm trying to tell you as honestly as I know how, what happened, and I think this is a message I want to get across. But as a young boy, and I mean a boy of 12, 13, certainly, that I encountered outside the home again in the local grocery store, the local drug store, the softcore pornography, what people call softcore. But as I think I explained to you last night, Dr. Dobson, in an anecdote, as young boys do, we explored the back roads and sideways and byways of our neighborhood, and oftentimes people would dump the garbage and whatever they were cleaning out of their house, and from time to time we'd come across pornographic books of a harder nature than more graphic, you might say, more explicit nature than we would encounter, let's say, in your local grocery store. And this also included such things as, let's say, detective magazines and more hardcore.
Those that involve violence.
Yes. Yeah. And I this is something I think I want to emphasize is the most damaging kinds of pornography. And I'm talking from personal experience, hard, real personal experience. The most damaging kinds of pornography are those that involve violence and sexual violence. Because the wedding of those two forces, as I know only too well, brings about behavior that is just too terrible to describe.
Now, walk me through that. What was going on in your mind at that time?
Okay, before we go any further, I think it's important to me that people believe what I'm saying, to tell you that I'm not blaming pornography, and not saying that it caused me to go out and do certain things, and I take full responsibility for whatever I've done and all the things that I've done. That's not the question here. The question and the issue is how this kind of literature contributed and helped mold and shape the kinds of violent behavior.
It fueled your fantasies, didn't it?
Well, in the beginning, it fuels this kind of thought process. Then, at a certain time, it's instrumental in what I would say crystallizing it, making it into something which is almost like a separate entity inside. And that at that point, you're at the verge, or I was at the verge of acting out on this kind of these kinds of thoughts.
Now, I really want to understand that you had gone about as far as you could go in your own fantasy life mm-hmm. with printed material, and you made or printed and video or film
magazines, yeah. what have you. Yeah.
And then there was the urge to take that little step or big step over to a physical right. Event.
And it happens, it happened in stages, gradually. It doesn't necessarily, not to me at least, happen overnight. My experience with, I say pornography generally, but with pornography that deals on a violent level with sexuality, is that once you become addicted to it, and I look at this as a kind of addiction, like other kinds of addiction, I would keep looking for more potent, more explicit, yeah, more graphic
aggressive.
Kinds of material. Mm-hmm. Like an addiction, you keep craving something which is harder, something which gives you a greater sense of excitement. Until you reach the point where the pornography only goes so far. You reach that jumping off point where you begin to wonder if maybe actually doing it will give you that which is beyond just reading about it or looking at it.
So guys, that is a confession by Ted Bundy, right? Maybe you guys should just take a minute, maybe, you know, on your free time, you could check out this guy. Crazy guy. Suppose he was exposed to this kind of material from a very young age, and he developed, it became something else. You can hear from his side that it manifested to a point whereby just reading it, just looking at it wasn't enough. There was a need to go over the line. That's the whole idea. Maybe not everyone who consumes this kind of material does become a serial killer, but there's always an influence that it generates in an inclination towards violent crime. It might not just be serial killing. It could be rape. Rape is another manifestation of this thing, right? Through the story of John Gacy, a guy who abused over 33 young boys, it got to a point whereby the wife divorced him. Why? Because he had a collection of material that contained that was centered around inflicting pain on young boys, like pornography that was centered around inflicting pain on young boys. So I'm trying to show you guys that these things that we have normalized in our society, especially the young people, this is why I'm having this conversation. It is trying to show you that it's not as good as you think. It may not make you a serial killer, but I'm trying to show you, like, these guys, all of them, they had a real connection with porn, like an addiction, like basically it was an addiction, and it drove their actions to some point. Yeah. So, according to research, it shows that consuming pornography for a long time basically changes the structure of the brain and desensitizes it from violence and pain. Like, if you're consuming hardcore pornography over a very long time, it's going to get to a point whereby your brain is hardwired not to feel pain or violence, right? A good example is a guy who's been watching horror movies over an extended period of time. Let's say I've been watching horror movies since I was like, let's say I was like 16, right? By the time I get to my 20s, I can't watch PG-13 and feel the same thrill. It's not the same anymore. Like, my dopamine receptors at that point are basically fried. That is how it goes. You start off very slow. You feel like, let me just look at this. This isn't so bad. But with time, as you heard from Ted Bundy himself, some person who killed so many women, 30 plus, he said that it starts off very slowly. It manifests to more harder kind of, you know, consuming more harder material. Because your dopamine receptors just can't see the regular stuff and feel the thrill of it. It wants more, right? So, one thing we have to understand is the fact that pornography has led to a disturbing increase, a disturbing trend, whereby we've seen a high number of rape cases and incest that have been manifesting in our families, in our homes. It is one of those things that makes us quite worried about the influence of these things, right? I saw and realized that the UK as well has been heavily affected by this kind of material. Closer to home, I did a little analysis of those guys who have had been sex offenders in the country, those guys who have been violent criminals and what we'd label as serial killers, right? We have guys like Philip Onyancha, quite known, killing of 18 women back in the 2010s. Geoffrey Matheri also killed a couple of guys back in the time. There's a young boy called Marston Milimu Wanjala. This was a case that happened, I don't know, late 2020 or something, 2019. But one of those things that I noticed, a relationship between the time that these things happened and the swinging 70s, is the fact that all these killings happened after 2010, basically. After they happened in the 2010s, like early 2010s, right? Onyancha was a case of 2010. This was all cases that happened after we had post-election violence. This period of turmoil, this period of confusion, is when we see the manifestation of these kind of people. Geoffrey Matheri, this is 2008 case. This guy was also, he was called the Vampire of Naivasha or something. The guy was cutting people and drinking their blood. So there's always an influence on the, there's an influence of the geopolitical situations in the times that these things happen. Like, they relate to each other. I've been consuming porn for a long time, for example, right? And then I get to a point whereby I notice a lot of political instability. Right, there is no safety, like no one is going to respond to whatever I'm doing because there's so much confusion. That is when it manifests, and that's when you feel like this is the right time to actually step to the next level. And one thing we know for a fact is the fact that history repeats itself. That is why we're having this conversation. We are trying to save the next future, the next generation of young people. We, as the parents who are probably listening through this, or maybe us young people who are listening to this podcast today, to understand that pornography is very dangerous to a point whereby it can lead to manifestation of very violent crime, including killing people, including things like rape, including things like incest, even in your families. This is dangerous. Now, the next thing that we are going to listen to is quite disturbing. Why is it disturbing? Because this guy, he explains the nature of his crime. This is going to be very disturbing, and I urge you to be strong enough and listen through it, because this is just a point of learning. This is learning we are learning here, right? And one thing I realized about serial killers is their tendencies to take pride in what they've done. They are never remorseful about it. They enjoy listening to people narrate whatever they've done, whatever they did, or they themselves narrating what they did. It's like a big turn on to them. They lack what we call empathy. Right. Let me give you a classical example. The case of Ted Bundy. Ted Bundy was quite an intelligent guy, though he was a very, very violent criminal. He was a vile man. That's how I would describe him. He was a man with no human, with no humanity in him, basically. But this guy was actually the lawyer in most of his cases throughout his period of being taken before court. And I remember there was one point during his time in court, while he was in court, that he was forced to cross-examine the policeman who went and noticed who was a witness in one of the killings that he had done. So cross-examining is basically the lawyer asking the witness who's on the stand how they saw the scenario and everything. And Ted Bundy kept asking over and over again for the police officer to explain the nature of how he saw that crime scene. Why? Because for him, that brought him so much thrill. He lacked empathy. He didn't feel bad about it. He liked when people talked about it. So this guy, this next guy is called Gerald. He's going to talk about how pornography basically drove him to the point where he did some very heinous acts. So listen, as I've said before, it's going to be very disturbing, but just listen.
After about 2 years of molesting my son and all the pornography that I had been buying, renting, swapping, I had gotten my hands on some bondage and discipline pornography with children involved. And some of the reading that I had done and the pictures that I had seen showed total submission, forcing the children to do what I wanted. And I had eventually started using some of this bondage and discipline with my own son. And it had escalated to the point where I was putting a large Ziploc bag over his head and taping it around his neck with black duct tape or black electrical tape and raping and molesting him at that point, to the point that he would turn blue, pass out. At that point, I would rip the bag off his head, not for fear of hurting him, but because of the excitement. I was extremely aroused by inflicting pain. And when I seen him pass out and change colors, that was very arousing and heightening to me, and I would rip the...
That's just the first part of what really happened to this guy. So, just as you've heard, this was a guy who had been arrested for multiple counts of child molestation, starting from his own stepson to a wide range of victims. But I want you guys to listen to how this guy's brain has been rewired, how it has been changed to become something else, something completely different from how a normal human being should be. Okay? So that's just the first part. Now listen to the second part. Just gets worse and worse and worse. But just listen to it. This is a lesson that is going to probably stick with you for many years if you're willing to go to the end, till the end. So let's listen to the second part.
More, the immediate thought process was scream, pain, excitement. They wanted it. There was no change after that. I had told myself so much that I had built it into it. It was a built-in thinking process at that process at that point. That child was crying, screaming, because they wanted me to inflict the pain. No matter how much I hurt them, there were incidents and cases where tissue had been torn, blood, and I know there was pain. But I had no remorse for it. I didn't feel sorry for it. I was aroused to that. And the child screaming made the arousal even higher.
It's obvious that this offender and other sadists do not have empathy for their victims, but it would be a mistake to think that a victim empathy program would help. Victim empathy programs work by teaching offenders what the victim is feeling during the attack, that is, that the victims are suffering. Sadists know this already. The problem is the victim's suffering doesn't upset them, it sexually arouses them. In this section, Gerald will tell us exactly how he felt about his victim's suffering.
At the time, I didn't have any feelings for anybody other than myself. I wanted me to feel good, and it didn't make a difference who hurt in the process as long as I felt good. I was very apathetic. I had very little feelings for anybody. At that point in my life, I don't think I had empathy for anybody, including myself. I'm not even sure I knew what empathy was at that point. I didn't care about other people's feelings. I didn't care for other people, period.
Horrific stuff. This is just horrific. Whatever I've just heard, whatever I heard, and now that I have to repeat hearing it, it's quite scary when you listen to it. But this is the nature of men. This is the nature of men who've been exposed to this kind of literature for such a long time that they've taken course to actually do it. But generally, in this case, this is a guy who was doing it multiple times. He was committing rape, right? This is classified as violent crime. He had just, okay, this is a part where he talks about he felt the need of taking the next step after this. Like he said, if he hadn't been arrested 2 months prior, If it had taken 2 more months from the time of his arrest, trust you me, he swore that he would have actually killed somebody. This is how things go. This is how things progress. And it is important for us guys to realize that consumption of pornography isn't something that should be normalized. We should all be anti-porn at this point in our lives. Whether you have a friend, a young one who's into this stuff, it is important to discourage them from involving themselves rather than normalizing it and making it seem like something that we should all be doing, something that we've all done, but we do not understand the brain makeup of each individual is just different. We are hardwired differently. There are people who are going to consume this and they feel the need to actually act it out. I don't know if today's podcast has been enough influence for you guys to feel like there's a need for us as a society to realize that it is high time that we put down policies limiting how much of this material that as a generation we are consuming, because it is going to affect us in a way that we do not understand. The fact that we as a country, especially Kenyans, we've just got to a point where it's so normal. People talk about it like it's not a big deal. But we do not really understand how much it's going to build a violent mindset, especially in the young people who do not really understand the workings of the world. They do not differentiate between the right and the wrong. Their brains have not been fully developed. It's important that we understand this. You see, when I analyze the cases of most of these Kenyan serial killers, from Maderi to Philip Onyancha to Masten, me, I don't know, Wanjala, all these guys, one thing I realize is the fact that we as a country, we have not advanced in how we analyze the criminal mindset. We do not really have advanced psychologists or psychiatrists who can tell us this guy is suffering because of this and this and this, and probably the causative agent of all this might have been this, I progressed to this. All these cases, it is just blame to satanism and devil worshipping, you know, some very weird kind of approach that we take as a nation. But we really don't take time to analyze the mind of a serial killer, like how our more advanced brothers in the West do it, or the guys in the United Kingdom. It's not the same, or our Russian counterparts. It's just not the same. Why? Because we are a developing country in terms of how we are understanding things. We're really coming up into this thing. And it is not a case that has been reoccurring. Yeah, like it's not something that happens a lot in our country as of now. But with the dawn of the age of internet and how much internet we are consuming as a country, especially this young generation, you know, history tends to repeat itself. That is just the sad reality of our world. History repeats itself. Maybe we've not got to that point, but we are heading there. How much are we normalizing some of these things that lead to disasters like serial killings in societies? So, today's episode was just to show you guys that pornography plays a very, very, very strong role in developing a violent criminal's mind. And it is important for us to know that it's high time that we actually stop normalizing it. It's not something we should normalize, something we should stand up and fight against. Otherwise, we are going to lead so many young brains to hell. Not like literally hell, but you know, to a very dangerous place in their lives. That is the whole idea. And I feel like there's no more that I can see past that. I have said enough. I've given you enough reason and evidence, if I may call it evidence, for you to really see the depth, the magnitude of what porn is to the human mind. The human mind, making the mind of a serial killer. And that is it for today. Until the next time we meet, I just wish you a wonderful time. And above all things, digest this information and see a way that you can touch one life, at least one or two. Of those people who know are actually struggling with this, there are ways that they can actually, there are processes, there are programs these days to help guys to stop exposing themselves to this kind of literature, to this kind of videos, and I don't know how I can describe it, but it's important that we just stay away from it for the safety of our minds, our sanity. I don't know, ladies and gentlemen, just stay away from it. That's it for today. Until we meet again, have a wonderful time. you know, take care of yourself above all things. Take care of each and every person that is related to you if you can. Just take time and be a blessing in the lives of the people who are around you. So till we meet again, be blessed and have an amazing week.
Bless the Lord, oh my soul, oh my soul. Worship His holy name. Sing like never before, oh my soul. I worship Your holy name. The sun comes up, it's a new day dawning. It's time to sing Your song.